Hello, and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Jazz Wilson. And for you today, I have a wonderful, amazing guest. And do you know what? She is all the way across the pond. Yes, she is over in the USA currently because she is coming to the UK to do one of the most amazing festivals that any thespian can do. That is the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. She is bringing the show Brain Hemingway over here again, and let her tell you all about it. Welcome my guest, Erin. Hello, Erin.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Good. Yes, I'm good. Thank you. Good. Yes. Enjoying this lovely British weather that is rain that we're having at the minute. But, you know, it's the way it goes. Erin, let's dive straight in. Tell people a bit about yourself, kind of going all the way back from childhood and performing, and how it all started and blossomed for you.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I grew up in Connecticut, USA. I had a lot of family members who enjoyed theater. I was really, really lucky to grow up so close to New York City. So I got to see a lot of Broadway shows. And I just immediately started writing musical theater as soon as I could get ideas in my head. And my first show was produced at my high school when I was 18 years old. I did a musical version of Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility. And then I went to Berklee College of Music, and I've just been writing musicals ever since. And I guess in the last 15 or so years, I've had a show produced most years and have gotten to work with some really great theaters and with some really cool people.
Awesome. Awesome. So tell us a bit about the show that you're taking to the Fringe this year, because it sounds super interesting. However, I do not know anything about the person. So please inform me and the rest of the Amdram fam about your wonderful show.
Sure. So Brain Hemingway is based on a true story, and it's basically about a blocked writer who's working towards a deadline, but is distracted and harassed by the version of Ernest Hemingway that lives in her head. And Ernest Hemingway is a famous American author. He's pretty legendary here. He's more legendary as a man, really, than he is as an author, even though his books are very, very good. But he's sort of this this totem of masculinity here. And about 10 years ago, I wrote a musical about him and about his relationships with his wives. And it didn't do very well, but it also got some pretty nasty feedback from people who really didn't want to hear his masculinity challenged in a way. And I didn't feel like I was challenging it as much as talking about who he was as a person, not just as this this kind of hero of fishing and bullfighting and all of those things. So during COVID, when I was kind of trying to figure out what am I going to write about, these invasive thoughts about that show kept coming back to me, and I decided I was going to try and write it out a little bit, and it turned into a whole 50-minute show. So that was pretty convenient.
Wow. Music and dances and everything, a full-on production?
Yes. So it's not as song and dancey as some of the things I've written in the past, because it's about a blocked songwriter. It didn't feel natural to have too many songs up front. There's a bit more music as it continues, and there is one whole song and dance number. Okay. But I hope it feels very natural as a musical theater piece, even though it's kind of about the lack of music.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, yeah. I like the irony in that. That's great. What inspired you to write a show about him specifically?
I think originally, so this was about 10 years ago, or actually 11 years ago now, geez. I went to Paris for the first time, and I read A Movable Feast, which is his posthumous novel about when he lived in Paris. just because I felt like it was just the sort of thing to do when you're in Paris. And because I had this idea of the mythical Ernest Hemingway in my head, I was really surprised by how tender his writing could be. I think the assumption to make is that because he was such a masculine person, that for some reason that means you hate women. And so I was kind of struck by how he wrote about the women in his life and how multi-layered they were. And so I just sort of dug in a little bit more, and I felt like I was uncovering a person beneath the myth. And that just intrigued me so much. And I don't always get to choose what hooks me and what I want to write about. And this just hooked me in that particular way, and I couldn't stop writing.
Wow. That's what you want. You're gonna write a show, you want somebody that's gonna keep you writing. You don't want to get writer's block, ironically. Wow, it's interesting that he was perceived as one thing and you kind of uncovered the other layers and elements of him and his life through his writing.
Yeah. And I think actually I watched Ken Burns did a documentary for PBS on him recently. And now a lot of the talk around Hemingway is about the person that he created for himself, the legend that he cultivated for the public, and how that affected his writing and how it affected his mental life. And 10, 11 years ago, that wasn't really the discourse around it. So it was really validating to see that Ken Burns documentary and hear people talk about exactly what I had found.
Nice. So kind of backed up the research and the writing that you have done. That's, yeah. That's handy for marketing, I bet.
It's because the show is kind of about what I remember about Hemingway rather than actual Hemingway.
Oh, okay.
It's been really funny kind of talking about it, because you can learn about Hemingway by seeing this show. He's still as accurate as I can remember him, but he's also kind of the manifestation of, I guess, toxic masculinity as I've experienced it in my career. So I wouldn't base a book report on it.
Okay. Nice. Erin, what is your big ambition in life? I mean, writing sounds like a massive part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've always written. I've always been able to express myself really well through that. I think life ambition, who knows? Because life is both very long and very short, and there are so many things to do. I really like learning about things and learning about people and cultures and experiencing as much as I can, and whatever direction that takes me. And I would just say my ambition is to continue absorbing as much as I can and hopefully write about it. I learned last year at the Fringe that I'm just as happy with my work being seen by 5 people at the Fringe as I am 200 people off Broadway. So, you know, that's a good place to be as a writer, because then you know that you're really doing something you love.
Yeah. Wow. Awesome. So besides writing, which sounds like it takes up a lot of your time, do you have any other hobbies or interests?
I do. I am an amateur beekeeper.
Wow. That sounds fun.
It's the one hive. When COVID hit and we moved to New Hampshire, we got a hive of bees because I'd always been really interested in that. And so this is my third season with them and the first time that they've lasted over the winter. So it's been very exciting. I love to volunteer at the local zoo and learn about different animals. I'm a Civil War buff, and we recently went on a trip to Gettysburg and saw the battle sites and everything. So I'm a nerd. I like to learn. I like to explore and read everything I can about a subject and then go visit that place. And so that's kind of what happened with Hemingway. You know, all of a sudden it just lights a fire in my brain and I have to take in everything.
Fair enough. Yeah. Nice. Many strings to your bow. Wow. A beekeeper. I don't think I know any beekeepers. And like, It's like a thing over here.
Yeah. Well, actually, I wanted to go over to the UK when I was, I think it was 20 or something, and spend the summer on a farm beekeeping, and it didn't work out. So it's always been in the back of my mind. So now I just have the one hive, and I don't even really like honey. I just like to watch them and just learn. They're so fascinating. They're really rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah, you hear that a lot, actually, like people talking about it. Interesting. I love asking that question because I never know. I never know what's going to come out of it. Like, of all the questions I ask, I always look forward to that one, not knowing what to expect. Yeah. And once again, completely surprised me with beekeeping, Aaron. Wow. Over your time, have you met many famous people that besides writing and beekeeping?
No famous bees yet. I've met quite a few people. I'm trying to think about who would be the most interesting. I worked at the Boston Symphony Orchestra for a long time, just in their gift shop when I was going to college, and I would work the CD signing. So I got to meet all sorts of people like Andre Previn and Anna Sophie Mutter and Amanda Palmer and those people. And then later on, when I was in New York, I was in the BMI Lemon Engel musical theater workshop, and so got to meet people like Stephen Schwartz, who wrote Wicked.
Wow.
The Lopez's, who did Frozen and Avenue Q and things like that. In theater, I guess probably the most famous person is Jeff Goldblum. I have met Jeff Goldblum, and he called me a trembling aspen. That was very exciting. I was 18 years old. I saw him in The Pillow Man, which is now back in the West End, and I'm very excited to see Steve Pemberton in the same role. So John Williams was a really big one, who wrote all of the music for Star Wars and Indiana Jones. He signed my Raiders of the Lost Ark vinyl and asked if I thought Harrison Ford would mind him writing on his face. So that was very,
that was very
good for me.
Some very cool people, especially theater-based people as well, which is is really, really good. That's awesome. Jeff Goldblum, I can't believe. Yeah.
He's
funny.
He's
what a character.
I was 18 at the time, and I was just losing my mind over it.
I bet. Fangirling, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, Erin, just writing the show is not enough for you, right? You love to be in it.
I don't know if I love to be in it. I prefer to be in it. It works easier to be in it. And I'm playing myself, a version of myself. So Okay. Yeah, it's, you know, you gotta be scrappy when you go to the Fringe. So I play myself, my husband plays Hemingway, and keeps the overhead a little lower.
Yeah, of course. So have you done things before?
Yes. So the last time I've done, I don't know why I said it like that, because I tend to end up in the stuff I work on despite my protestations. And I had an off-Broadway show called God Save Queen Pam, and I was in that. And then I had a variety show in Boston for two shows a long time before that. So I do tend to finagle my way into the show.
And what has been your favorite part that you've played?
I have a feeling this one's going to be my favorite, because even though it's the second time I'm doing it this year, the character gets to be in pajamas for the whole show. So I feel like that's going to be really nice.
Nice.
And I get to just kind of be tired and depressed. So it's really easy work for me.
I like that. Just imagine you writing the script going, yep, she's in pajamas the whole show. Yeah. And going, that'd be really comfy. Yeah.
And also maybe she's got a bag of crisps. And
Yeah. And a couple of margaritas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Awesome. A show in pajamas. I mean, the pajama game is probably the only other thing I can think of people in pajamas. When you go to the Fringe, you never know what you're going to get.
Absolutely.
So do you have any rituals, any pre-show rituals before you go on?
I tend to, it's hard to kind of turn on the actor person, because before then I'm the writer or the marketer, or, you know, just hanging out with front of house is always really fun. So I can't think of too many rituals to get myself onto acting, into acting, Aaron. I do like to have a Ricola. They make these honey herb cough drops, and they're really good for opening up your sinuses and your throat really quickly. So that just makes your voice a little stronger. And my husband and I also warm up by saying, "Bring back my pig," which is a really strong way to just get
bring
your
back your my pig.
Bring back my pig, and that just gets you going.
I love that. I know what the title of this episode is going to be called. Wow. Bring back my pig. Love that. So this is your second time round going to the Fringe with this show. Anyone out there wanting to write a show of their own and take it to the Fringe, what advice would you give them?
There's something really, really special about the Fringe. And coming at it as an American, there's not too much like it here. We don't really have the big Fringe festivals. And this being the biggest one in the world, it can be really overwhelming. And going for the first time, I had no idea what to expect. And coming from the theater of New York City, and even in Boston, it can be pretty cutthroat there. And it can be pretty isolating. But then the Fringe is so community based, and it's so creativity and artist driven. It feels like this really nice warm cocoon. And of course, you're going to find those moments where things do feel a little bit more cutthroat, or you get a little jealous, or someone's jealous of you or something. But for the most part, everybody wants to help each other out. You know, the creativity of humanity, not to be too, you know, up my own butt about it.
No, it sounds lovely.
There's this idea of, you know, every person is creative, and it's the other stuff that keeps us from being creative. And I think especially with the internet, you really see people's inherent creativity on display, whether it's making videos on TikTok or you know, comedy, or even just writing pithy statements on Twitter. You really see how everyone is funny and everyone is creative. And that's on full display at the Fringe. And as long as you're happy to be writing something and performing something and seeing other people do the same thing, and understanding that, you know, maybe you'll be performing it to two people. As long as you can take that in and still be happy doing it, you're going to have a great time.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's been many years since I've been up at the Fringe. But exactly what you were saying about the community aspect of it, I don't know if they still do it, but when we went, you were able to see any other show that was performing in the same venue as you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's a great idea to just put bums on seats, basically.
At Green, we're at Greenside, and you get a lanyard, and you can see anything. It's great.
Awesome. So why the Fringe? Like, because that is a lot of travel for you being over there. Why the Fringe specifically?
I think, just having accidentally raised myself with a sensibility for British comedy by just watching. I mean, I grew up watching Blackadder and The Young Ones, Keeping Up Appearances. And just kind of accidentally formed this sensibility that doesn't always go over well here. I always think of Sylvia Plath saying, what did she say? My American publisher doesn't exist, is what she'd say. But so all of those people that I was really inspired by, you know, your Ben Eltons and your League of Gentlemen's and those sorts of people, they all started at the fringe. All of those stories start at the fringe. And I took a long time getting there, but it was always in the back of my mind as sort of a right that I had to take.
I see. A bucket list.
Yes.
Wow. And now you're doing it for the second time with the same show. Phenomenal. About the show, please, Erin, this is your chance to tell everybody, where is it being performed, when, and how can they get tickets?
It is being performed at Greenside Nicholson Square at Fern Studio. It is going to be on at 5:30 every evening for the duration of The Fringe, starting August 4th. And then our last show is August 26th. And you can get tickets at brainhemingway.com.
Brainhemingway.com. It makes it nice and easy, that.
Yeah.
Erin, thank you for your time. But before you go, I have one last question for you that I didn't pre-send through, that I ask all of my guests. So if you've listened before, you know what's coming. If your life was a show, what would it be called and why?
Oh my gosh. Dogs I've Met.
Nice.
Called Dogs I've Met because every section of it will be divided into important moments of my life and the dog I was more interested in at the time.
That sounds great. And I hope that the same spark and run you've had with Hemingway, you have and write that show, because I'd be there in an instant. Wow, Dogs I've Met. Awesome. Awesome. Erin, thank you so much for your time today. Please just tell us one more time where people can get tickets to come and see you at The Fringe.
Brainhemingway.com.
Brainhemingway.com. Erin, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it so much. And good luck with the run. I hope it goes well, and I hope you have a safe journey over here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Erin. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
It's on a podcast.